It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
About people. We had the short opening tonight there.
Yes, I forgot to mention that it was the short one. Due to whatever.
That's the button.
Our early, yes. Well, that's automatic. That would have come on anyway, but that's always good. Welcome to the program. This is Mike and Ron hosting, as always, the show, another informative show. Tonight we have a special guest in case you haven't connected to our tweets yet or the Facebook page. You should do that because that's where we announce a lot of the shows. And this one, of course, was announced on Blog Talk Radio, so it just depends. But you get all the current and information. Really, the quickest way is through Facebook, because that's where Ron posted himself, and there you go. There's the source. So,
yeah,
that's your best.
Got a new Facebook person just joined us a couple of days ago, too, so thanks. You know who you are. Facebook's the way to do it.
Yeah, glad to have you with us. And go to facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR, and go ahead and like the page and subscribe to it, whatever you want, notifications, so you can keep in tune to what's happening on the program and as things are done. So great. Well, that's great that we have somebody new following. So that's cool. Thank you very much. Well, we have a few minutes to kill.
Yeah, we have a while we're doing, Mike and I were talking a little bit before the program about, you know, listeners. And thank you, by the way, all of you people out there listening to us live, and our live listeners have picked up too, which is cool. All of you people listen to us live and on archives and all this stuff. But I was looking back at some old stats, and there's a lot of the earlier shows that are still available. If you are interested, if you want to listen to some of the earlier shows, you can always go back in archives and pick those things up. Listen to those. There's a lot of interesting topics. And, you know, I catch myself referring to earlier shows, not because I'm trying to guide you to it. It's just the fact that it's easier for me to say, we talked about this earlier, as opposed to going into it every time. So check out the earlier shows. If you're interested, you can always check and see what the shows are about and all that. But they all are out there. And I know you all haven't listened to them because the numbers are down. And, you know, I mean, we're getting quite a few listeners on each program now through archives and stuff, and not nearly those on the earlier shows. So you get a chance, catch up. There's lots of programs out there that you may find that information that you didn't know or that you want to know about or something. So check those out.
Yeah, cool. Excuse me. Okay. What do we have? I will go get our first guest here.
Okay, I'll get you. We got Bill Christie from Christie Vineyards in Templeton, Pennsylvania is going to be our guest tonight. I have to tell you how Bill came about to being a guest, although he's not on yet. So his wife, Zoe, came into the winery, and we were talking and talking about wines and stuff. And I mentioned that I do the Blog Talk Radio program, as I do to a lot of people that come in. Let them know about it in case you're interested. And Zoe said, well, we have a vineyard. And I said, really? Where? Who? What? And she said, in Pennsylvania, we do a lot of growing. We haven't opened a winery yet, but we're looking at doing that in the future, too. And I said, well, we'd love to have you as a guest on the program. She said, well, I'm going to be down here for a little bit longer, but when I get home, we would like to, you know, it would be nice. We'd be happy to be a guest. So I said, okay. And she gave me information on all that. Called her a couple days ago, yesterday, and asked her if she wanted to be on the program. She said, no, I can't be on the program. You're going to have to talk to Bill. He's the one that talks. And so I said, well, is Bill willing and able and be able to join us? And she goes, yes, he will. And so I told her, you can always stand by, because if anything and Bill says he's not going to do it, then you're going to have to be the guest because we're counting on you. So she said, no, he'll do it. So... I think is it Bill that's waiting in the background there for us in the blue room?
Yes. Okay. He has a few minutes. Yeah.
Okay. So Bill is on in the blue room. Let's get him up on the program here. Hello, Bill. Welcome to All About Wine.
Hello.
We were just telling a little background of how we got your number and how we got a hold of everything. Zoe was down here visiting. And she said that you would be more than willing to talk on the program.
Well, willing anyway.
So you have a vineyard. And I understand, and if I remember correctly, Zoe said something about you are going to be looking at opening up a winery maybe this summer?
Yes, it just depends on... Oh, just how everything lines up, and we were looking to see what our production was last year before we opened up this year. But yeah, we're looking at getting our permit hopefully by this fall.
Fantastic. Well, right now you are a grower, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you grow actually. When Christy was here, she wrote. Zoe was here, I keep wanting to say her first name as your last name. I apologize for that, but
that's right.
Zoe was here. She wrote down the grapes that you grow, the different types of grapes that you grow. And I do want to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about how they, how much of each one you have, what they, why these, how the climate affects it, when bud break is on all these, when harvest is on all these. And, I'm going to let you run with a lot of this stuff here. Like, you have La Crescent, Saval, Treminet, Riesling, which seems like the only one that we're really familiar with is the Riesling as far as the grapes that people really know. What came about? GR7, NY76, some of the grapes here. Tell us about them.
Well, evidently the reason why we got Riesling in the first place is because it had it was very a known grape, and we thought, well, that was a good one just to have to start with, and so it's a good white wine, and so we thought, well, that was a good place to start.
Mm.
But from there, our other main concerns when we started was we're a fairly cold climate location here, and so we were really looking for things that the types of grapes that would, give us good production here and, have a lot of variety and be able to mix some of them together. So we're actually looking, some of our grapes are actually made just for mixing, and that's our primary use. And so we did some of those for mixing. And besides that, we're looking for higher production wines because we don't have a lot of acreage in production. So what we were trying to do was get our tonnage up, by picking grapes that had high yields. So that was the basis. That's the first place we started at.
Question, if I'm going to jump in here, where is Templeton, Pennsylvania? Where are you located?
It's approximately halfway between Pittsburgh and Erie.
Oh, so you're north, cold, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're north, cold.
Yeah, nice spring day today of about 26, 28 degrees.
You know we're calling from Florida, don't you?
Yes, I do. I just came back from 2 weeks from there. I very well
did
know.
You?
Yes. So, yes, it was 15 degrees this morning, so that's a good wake-up call.
Yeah. Yeah, that will wake you up, won't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It has to. It'll freeze the coffee, so you're going to have to wake up somehow.
Yep, that's for sure.
So you start out with the Riesling, and then you got the others for, each one of them. La Crescent, a little bit about that.
Well, La Crescent, it's just a real nice light wine. It's supposed to be similar to Vignoles.
Oh.
And that's a real light, soft, easy drinking white wine. Has a little bit of possibly an apricot flavor to it. It's real winter hardy here, and it was a grape that actually came out of Minnesota, and so it would be very hardy here, and there's not much chance of getting too much frost damage here because it's actually rated for much more northern climate than we actually are. So we thought it was a very safe grape to start with.
You're going to use it as a wine grape or a blending?
The Crescent will be pretty much a wine grape in itself. It can be for blending, but it makes a real nice light wine just on its own.
And the Saval?
A real popular wine in the area here. It's just a normal white wine. It's fairly cold tolerant. We have to watch it a little bit. If we have a cold spring here, you have to worry about it might have an early bud break on it. But in the last few years here, it's done real well. Actually had an unbelievable yield on this for the last year, just way beyond what we had thought for the amount of vines we had put in.
Huh. And Traminette?
Traminette, that's supposed to be, it's crossed with Gewurztraminer, and it has good winter hardiness, and so it's in that same style, and has a little bit of a slight, spicy flavor to it, and so it's another good white, and it'll stand on its own also.
Frontenac. That one we've seen quite a bit in different wineries we've talked up in a cold climate. That must grow quite well in a cold climate because we hear about that often.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Frontenac here did real well, extremely well for us, and it's the same way. It's from University of Minnesota, and so it's same way. It's very cold hardy, and makes a nice medium-bodied to full-bodied red wine. And it's also good for mixing in with some of your wines that might be a little strong or a little tannic if you're trying to mix something that's not quite so tart. And so it's a good wine and a good producer. And actually, the vineyard that we had bought stock off of originally, that was one of his favorite wines. And so he actually kind of convinced us to do the Frontenac because it had such a good yield and made such a good red wine.
The Frontenac, I have to say, I've never had some because it's not something that you find a lot in the stores down here since it is such a cold weather grape. What flavors, what do you get out of that?
You know what? I can't actually tell you on that, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We put our first batch in this year. We're making some test runs this year, and it just made a good medium-bodied red wine. It didn't have the heavy tannins on the backside. It's just more or less, I guess, what you'd call a daily drinker, you know, something you'd have with a with supper, something that wasn't, you know, doesn't have, like, pepper on the backside. Not a real strong wine, but just a, you know, just a nice wine.
Acid's pretty balanced on it, then.
Yeah, good balance on it. And it's not hard to get that balance with that wine. It's pretty much when we harvested it and just ran it through its, you know, normal fermentation, there wasn't a lot of correction to do. It wasn't like it was hot. It wasn't like it had a lot of acid to it. It just was balanced on its own. So real easy to deal with.
Huh. Wow. Marquette.
Now, Marquette, that's another one that's out of Minnesota also, and it was supposed to be high in sugars so you could keep your alcohol content up.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes here with our growing season being short here, what we're concerned with is getting the bricks high enough before you harvest, before it gets too cold. So if some of your wines aren't quite up there and you're looking for something to mix, Marquette's good for that because it's got high sugars. And it has moderate acid, and it's also very disease-resistant, and it's easy to grow, and same way, very high yields on it. I mean, there's yields on Marquette that are up around 30 pounds per vine.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's one I've never heard of, a Corot or Corot Noir?
Yeah, Corot Noir, and we hear that pronounced about every which way that there is. So, but Corot Noir is what we pretty much stay with. Now, it's the same way. It's when we pick these red wines, we're looking for something. In this area here, there's not a lot of good deep red wines, and these wines were suggested to us by a couple of other local wineries that have been in existence for over 30 years, and they thought that these had the best potentials to make a good you know, real solid tannin on the backside of it, and, you know, just a good wine to drink. More of what here in PA, what they do is they make a lot of light, wet red wines.
Right.
Because the tannins aren't high a lot of times. But these varieties here, like Corot Noir, have good tannins in them. And they're a mid to late season grape. So one of the problems is the Corot Noir was actually our last ripening vines this year, and so our concern with them is that we have a long enough growing season that they are able to sweeten enough before we can harvest them.
Oh, is that one of those another one of those Minnesota hybrids?
No, that actually comes out of Cornell.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. I've never heard of that one. That's the first time I've ever heard that mentioned. And that's, you know, we talked to a lot of people about grapes. Noiret?
Yes. That's, in my opinion, that's our best red wine. I just love that wine. It's amazing. I'm not sitting with a glass of it right now. And my wife's laughing over here because since we got done bottling, I think I've had a glass almost every night of that. I just love that. It's a good cross and real nice tannins on it. If you like a dry wine, this is a wine you can actually just take to dry, no sweetness, no residual sugar in it, and you can just sit down, and it's just very balanced just on its own.
It's a Minnesota, Cornell?
That's also a Cornell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we had three varieties from Cornell, and those were all grapes that we had to, you know, pay a franchise fee for. Very good. All three of those high harvest, you know, high yields on them and good tannins and, you know, some of the grapes that they are actually saying are like what's up and coming.
Oh, Bocco, is it pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
Bocco?
Yep. Now, we didn't put a lot of Bocco in. We only put 100 vines of Baco in, and we used it more for blending. It's real popular here in our area. What's that? Yes, yes, and I guess the thing is here is they say that if you don't like wine and you're a beer drinker, that you'll drink Baco. It just hits the same place. So we put some of this Baco in, and it's real close to the GR7. GR7's a hybrid of Baco and Buffalo. And so the GR7's a little heavier, a little bit more tannins, and it's a lot more vigorous than the Baco is. But the Baco itself, you know, it's one of those ones you could lose. You know, you might have only production on it every 2 or 3 years. If you have cold springs, it's a little susceptible to that, you know.
Oh, so it's not a cold weather hybrid then?
No, Baco's not a cold weather hybrid. Nope. But it's a very good selling wine in this area. So,
just light, fruity?
No. Baco's more of a heavy wine. Has high acid. Really, really dark pigmented. Real flavorful wine.
Okay. And the GR7, then you said that was the Baco is. And the GR7 is apparent. What's the GR7 like?
The GR7 is just it's pretty much the same. There's not a lot of difference. If you're a wine drinker, you'd notice the difference right away. But the normal person would just say it's another heavy red wine. The advantage to the GR7 is it's the same way. It's high yield, and it's very vigorous. And in fact, I would say it was probably our most vigorous plant. It just virtually just took over the trellis system in short order. I mean, you didn't have to do any weeding underneath it because it was so vigorous it just killed everything that was underneath it. There was just nothing left. I mean, it was hard to get the tractor through the rows.
Wow.
And,
how about these vines, yield?
These are vines that are only 3 years old.
Wow. So high yield on it with all that vigor or not?
Yes, high yield. I would say that's easily in the 25 to 30 pounds or possibly more.
Wow.
Per vine.
While we're on the GR7, you make a wine from a GR7, is that what you're going to put on the bottle?
You know what? That's a very difficult thing. It's a GR7. We're going to have the same problem with it as we do with New York 76.
That was my next question.
Well, the thing is with them being such a technical thing, you know, New York 76 or GR7, and people aren't going to want to drink that. They're going to think that's just some concoction, you know.
Right.
So we'll probably use them for blending and come up with a name for them. You know, I don't know what we're going to do with them. That's a chore to take care of later, I guess, you know.
But, you know, And the New York 76, before I ask, go into this, let you talk about that, but that's the question, though. If these are good yield, they're putting out some good wine, you say they're nice, they're flavorful and all that stuff, to make a wine out of it, of Rido, if you will, then you wouldn't want to call it by its name. But then again, I'm enjoying a nice glass of GR7.
Right, exactly. There's just no romance to that, you know. So, and the New York 76 makes such a nice white wine, and it's the same way, and you'd like to just put it out as a varietal, but nobody's going to know that, you know. So, brand recognition, you know, you're hoping that when you pick a grape, you get some recognition from that, but I don't think that's going to happen with those two varieties.
So those are basically just blending wines then, that's our grapes. That's all you're looking at those.
Well, you know what? We'll use them for blending, but actually the New York 76 is my wife's favorite white wine of them all.
Wow.
Yes, and so it's very, very tasty. You know, it's good wine. And it's,
any
it's
sweetness?
The same way. It's very
any
sweet.
Is it?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's just on its own. I mean, we try to do our wines out to dry when we produce them, and it must have held some residual sugar in it to start with because it was very sweet on its own just as we had finished it up.
Huh. Well, that's an interesting dilemma. You need to keep us informed of what you're doing when you come with those two. What your soil there? What type of soil are you planting all these in?
Well, we have a real unusual situation here. We were fortunate. We purchased our farm here in about 1999, and we didn't quite know what we were going to do with the farm when we bought it, and we had started going to the Finger Lakes. An untold amount of wineries up there, you know, and so we got interested in it. But the first thing we had to do was do soil testing on the property to see if we could even think about putting a winery in here. And we're right on a creek, and we're probably about 1,200-1,500 foot high, and that's probably about 600 or 800 foot above the creek level. But on the front corner of the farm, it was washed over with the creek at one point in time, and we have like a narrow band of sand and gravel and clay that's about 3 foot deep underneath the vineyard area. And we have 140 acres here, but there's only about 10 to 12 acres that just have this prime soil condition where there's actually gravel with sand and clay, so it holds the water, but it drains. And we have good air drainage because it's on a knoll. So it was just the right combination of conditions just for part of the farm to actually grow.
So you're planted on only those 10, 12 acres then for the grapes?
Yes, at the moment that's all we have planted. Now we have a couple other sites that we're considering, but our intentions when we were starting that we just wanted to be a small estate vineyard. So 10 acres is a lot of grapes.
10 acres is a lot, yeah, especially when you get high yield. But you've got, what, 9-10 wines on those 10 acres. You must have, what, partial rows of each grape and stuff like that?
Well, not really. What we did was we divided the field in half, and so we have probably about 12 or 14 half rows of each type that we put in. And then we chose to do a different type of planting, where the normal planting in this area for these grapes is more like 8-foot centers on
right.
the rows.
Right.
Yeah, we're down to actually 6-foot centers on our rows.
No wonder the grapes were growing so tight and clustered together. That's pretty close centers then.
Yeah, but the purpose of that is there's kind of like a twofold purpose here. In our area, that we have a fair amount of disease and you have some loss. And so actually between our post, we have 6 vines. Well, if one vine gets lost to disease, you just let it grow over.
Oh, okay.
So there are places here where when you first start the vineyard, we didn't have much loss the first year. We actually very, very little loss. The second year we had some loss of plants, some vines. But there was places there where we had our high-yield vines and the real vigorous vines, and when one of them disappeared, we just let it grow, the other two grow in and fill in the space.
Which works real well.
Yeah, as long as the trellis is covered, you're making grapes, you know.
That's true. That's very true. And as long as the disease that it's dying from is not passed on to the others, too. That's something you
mm-hmm.
need to be a little careful about. Since you've got this divided up like this, back at your vineyard again, bud break on all these grapes. They obviously aren't going to get bud break within a couple of weeks of each other. I mean, it seems like it would be spread out over 6 weeks or so, which therefore would cause harvesting to be all sporadic and everything also.
Right. Well, actually what we had done is when we picked our varieties, since we're a small family vineyard, we thought that we would be better off to start to harvest as early as August on a good year and finish up in late September, even early October. So what we did was the varieties we did, we look for high yields, but we also look for early, mid, and late season grapes so that we wouldn't have the whole field to harvest at one time.
Ah, so you actually did that as a plan so you wouldn't get bud break at the same time or harvest at the same time. So
right. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's done by hand then for my, I gathered there are no machine picking or anything.
Yeah, no, we don't have any machine picking here yet, although that may come sooner than we think, if you've ever picked many grapes.
I've picked my share, yeah, and it is not an easy task. Yeah.
No, no. It's time-consuming.
Yeah, so. It is. It gets to be tough. We talked about these grapes being cold hardy. What is your lows in the winter and your highs in the summer?
Our lows in the winter here, you know, normally we're going to be around 0, 5 degrees, something like that. Now, we have had years here in the last 10 years that have been as cold as minus 20, but
wow.
That's a rarity. That's a, you know, that's a 1 in a 10 or 1 in a 15 year. Pretty much, you know, if you get down to 0 a couple of days, 5 degrees a couple of days, that's the normal cold. Heat can really vary, but, you know, we get into the early, you know, into the low 90s, probably for 8 to 10 days a year or something like that. But pretty much we're in the 80s in the summertime.
Well, that's not too bad then, really. It's not getting real hot. Your rainfall, we can look at a map and see it move through there, but obviously different areas have pockets. Like down here, our winters, we get the cold fronts go through and gives us rain. Then, you know, summertime, our afternoon storms. Up there, do you have any rain patterns, or do you have a season that you can expect more rain than others? Or,
well, we're in a very rainy area in the area that we're at in Pennsylvania. We're far enough north that we can actually get winter snows and rains coming off the Great Lakes. And
wow.
So that affects us somewhat, and it just depends how it trails, those storms trail off the lake. And we're just on the southern end of that, so we don't get the super heavy rain from the lakes, but we do get the tail end of those. And then we're in a normal pattern that runs from the, you know, the southwest to the northeast that actually comes up the Ohio River Valley.
Mm.
Into the Allegheny River area. And so we're actually between two weather zones, and we get a fair amount of rain. You never have to irrigate here, and as soon as I say that, we're going to have a drought this summer. But
I was going to ask if you irrigate,
yes.
Because, you know, the rain's in.
No, we have – actually what we have to do is we have to time our sprays and our plantings. And actually our mowing and everything, we have to actually check the weather for a week in advance to actually look for those days that we can work in the vineyard that aren't wet.
Wow. So you, wow, that really do get a lot of rain then.
Yes, I mean, for us to go a week in the summertime without rain is actually a fairly long time. Week and a half without rain would be about as long as we normally go without a good rain.
Oh, so you do get a big influence then. The reason I'm astonished by that is because we were talking to some wineries in southern Pennsylvania, and a lot of those there were talking about the lack of rain and how they are really have to irrigate in different things. So I'm surprised just that short distance, and it is a rather short distance on the whole scale of things, how much rain you do get.
Well, where we're at here, we actually have had average or above average rain, and I have a son that just lives south and west of Pittsburgh a little bit, and they've actually been a drought situation for 2 years or a near drought situation for 2 years.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what I've been hearing from a lot of wineries we've been talking to, the, you know, over in the southeastern part of the state. They've been in, you know, severe water shortages for some time now. So
mm-hmm.
I guess it's lucky that you are getting the rain, because it's going to give your grapes, although depends on when it rains, it's going to give your grapes a good yield. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we've been fortunate since we've started 3 years ago. The rain has been real good, and we've actually had extremely warm years. And from what we've checked with other vineyards that were established at the 3 year period, the size of our vines are way above average, and also their vigor. So we've been very fortunate that way. We've gone to places here, close to here, where a 3 year vine may only be the size of your little finger, And
wow.
We a lot of our vines are literally inch and a half in diameter to 2 inches in diameter already after 3 years.
Wow. You've been growing for 3 years. Do you sell grapes, or are you just making wine yourself and you enjoy just sitting around drinking a lot?
Well, I enjoy the drinking a lot part. But, but no, our intention is this year, actually the first 2 years we had very little to no production the first 2 years. You know, we're just in the planting phase. But this year here, we weren't sure what type of production we would get because we, you know, never had a crop, never had any yields on this.
Oh.
So our problem this year was when the yields came, they were so high, and they came fast. So normally in Pennsylvania, you have like an 8-week period between the earlies to the late grapes to harvest.
Right.
And this year, with it being so warm this year, what happened was the growing season or the harvest season came down into a 2-week period. Even there's a lot of vineyards in the Erie region, and mm-hmm. they had the same problem. I mean, they just couldn't get the grapes out of the field fast enough.
Wow.
And that was our problem here this year. So our major concern is next year is not having grapes to make wine with or sell juice to, which we have other vineyards interested in, but it's actually to get the grapes out of the field. So we have to get some labor contracted in this area. And there are some mechanical pickers that come around and will subcontract, but the problem is that, you know, when it's busy that time of year, it's hard to get somebody in, you know.
Right, yeah. Unless you're trellis for the mechanical pickers, too, it makes it a little bit more difficult. And if you're getting that much rain, it's going to make it more difficult for the mechanical pickers there, too. I mean, it just, you know, it seems like you have a lot of factors that might be battling you on that.
Well, I think the other thing that hurt that was I think we kind of outsmarted ourselves. We thought that the ideal thing would be to have harvest spread out over an 8-week period. Well, with a 10-acre vineyard, you can't have somebody come in to harvest, you know, 6-8 times. So now what's happening is it's such a small amount we need harvested, you know, when,
right.
You know, now it's like you'd have to have a picker in too many times for it to be practical and not enough grapes for them to do it at a time.
And also, too, that gives you the situation where you're going to have pickers or hand pickers coming in over a 6-week period, too, and trying to get everything done. Wow. It sounds like you're going to be faced with a dilemma when it comes to that every year.
Well, what we're trying to do is there are some orchards here that they have seasonal workers at, and it's very close to here, just within 10 miles. And then we also actually have a lot of farm labor. It's a matter of getting them contracted. We have quite a few Amish in our area, and so we're hoping to maybe contract some of them for labor.
Oh, well, that would be good then. Yeah, that would work out well. You are making wine, obviously. You mentioned that. What are you using? You're using oak, stainless steel, carboys, plastic, what are you using?
Well, this year here, just for test runs, because it's, like I said, we weren't expecting the crop that we had. So we used some plastic barrels this year, and we used some carboys. So what we did was we made test runs and of different grapes and tried to do blending. And so we're just in the learning process. So a little bit of everything, but I really, in the long run here, the idea is to go to stainless, I think, more than anything.
Stainless is so expensive, you know, a lot of people are going plastic.
I know, and that's why we did plastic this year.
Yeah.
So the debate is on the long run, is it economical, you know?
Yeah, because stainless has become so expensive. It just, I hear this a lot from wineries, how the expense of stainless as opposed to plastic, and plastic has advanced to the point now where you don't get any stains on the plastic, you're not getting anything different than you are on stainless, and the cost is literally a fraction. So it's amazing the difference now. You're looking at building a winery. Tell me your thought plans on this. What you're looking at doing here and when you plan on opening and what you would like to have the winery look like and all this stuff. I mean, it's always fun to talk to someone in the planning stages because it's just it's exciting time for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we bought the farm, I'm a general contractor. That's been my profession for 40 years, and so I've built every brick and siding house that you can imagine over the last 40 years. So I wanted something different. So when we came to the farm, and this was before the vineyard, we built a Spanish style two-story stucco house with a two-story porch with archways the whole way across the front of it. And so we've got a Spanish style house to start with. So we did that actually before we started the vineyard. So I guess we're going to be, you know, more of a Spanish-looking winery just because the house is so predominant on the property. So when we go to build the wine building, we'll probably keep it in the same style. You know.
Keep that theme, yeah.
Yeah, keep that same theme running.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, that's I can just see this, but on 140 acres, a house can get lost in that. Are you the acreage? Is that on a main highway, or is that set back, or are you in an area where?
We're extremely remote where we're at. We're the type of place that people are going to have to come find us.
Mm.
So, but in this area, that's the thing to do. We have your average customer is going to travel. Pittsburgh. People travel from Pittsburgh to Erie all the time during wine season, and that's about a 70, 80, 90-mile run for most people.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we're only going to be 30, 40 miles. So it's normal here. I mean, when you talk to people, they don't want to drive over to the wine store 2 miles away. In Pennsylvania, it's fall season, and the leaves are changing, and so you hop in the car, and you hit 4 or 5 wineries up in the North Country. And so it's a very popular thing to do.
And there's a lot of wineries right there in northern Pennsylvania on Lake Erie, too. That's this, you know, it's one of the programs we did talking about all the wineries in that area there and all the fruits and everything else they grow there, all the trees and all that. So when is projected opening date?
Well, we got to go through the licensing process first. So
yeah,
once we get that, then we'll have an opening date set. But what we're looking for is we're looking to get that license this fall. And then, you know, you really don't like to put out your wines when they're too young. You want to get your white wines out there, but you want to get your red wines. You know, you like to leave them aged a little bit. You don't like to sell them too fresh to everybody because they don't really get the full value of it, you know.
Correct.
So we'll probably be trying to, you know, get going to the spring of 2014 to the summer of 2014 is probably when we're looking to open.
Fantastic. That sounds like exciting plans and exciting future for you there. That sounds like a lot of fun. Mike, you have any questions for Bill here?
No, I'm good. This is interesting. I like talking to him or listening to him. It sounds great. And I wish you best of luck with this venture to go opening up a winery. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is it just going to be you and Zoe going to take care of everything, or do you have extended family there or friends that are going to help you?
We have some extended family, and my oldest son works with me in the construction business, and he's been here through the whole process with the vineyard, too. So I think what we're planning on doing is trying to retire to the winery and stop doing the construction work.
So you plan on stop doing construction and work harder then?
No, I don't think so. I'm hoping
well,
not.
I'll tell you, when you start doing that stuff in the winery, you'd be surprised.
Yeah. It's not as easy as they make it out to be.
No, it isn't. No, and neither one of them, construction or the winery. Well, anything else you'd like to? Well, do you have? Oh, and I want to make a suggestion to you. And I said this to a earlier program we did to a guy that was opening a winery. You really need to set up a I'm bouncing around here because I have different thoughts coming up. Have you thought of a name yet for the winery?
No. We've been debating that, so we're not quite there with that. We're kind of tossing that up among our children and ourselves and trying to come up with one. No, we don't have a name for sure.
Well, then my suggestion is that you get yourself, open up a Facebook page and as Christy Vineyard and start doing the pictures of each step of the way in your construction and building of the winery and all that, and start making excitement out there for people to look forward to you opening. It sounds like an exciting thing, a great way to let people get excited about it, and keep pictures posted and keep everything going on that, and I'm sure you will have an opening day that will be overwhelming.
Well, let's hope so.
And thank you so much for taking your time with us, Bill. If you don't mind, I'm going to make a note here to call you next spring.
That's fine.
And we'll see where you're at on this new winery and how things are going and all that stuff. Just to get an idea of, you said it's going to be next spring or summer, and since it did just turn spring, then we're looking at 12 months down the road, you may be talking from the office in the winery. So,
well, let's hope so. That's a good idea. That's a good plan.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight, and we'll look forward to talking to you in about a year.
Okay. Well, I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Yeah.
Wow, very cool.
That was fun. And some of these grapes, like the GR7 and the NY76, that is a dilemma. And that's not the only grapes out there that are named like that. There's a lot of them coming out of Cornell and Minnesota and a lot of the different schools and all that around the country that are making grapes, making hybrids, and they're just giving them names like that. And if they turn out to be a nice yielding grape and a good wine grape, what are you going to call them? I mean,
right.
Stop by and pick up a nice bottle of an NY76, a New York 76. I mean, that, like you said, it doesn't sound romantic. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Well, it was good talking to him. Yeah.
It was a fun conversation. I'm glad we got a hold of him. And we'll make a note to get a hold of him in about a year and see what's happening with his winery and the plans and everything that's going on there. So
good.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
About 15 minutes here, a little less than 15. Well, actually, we got it 45 minutes, technically about 42. But a couple of three things I found here that I want to pass on. And just little things I found in, trade journals and different things. Stacked wine. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not. And if I did, I apologize for repeating it. But we've talked about stacked wines, the new thing of stacked wines that come into little, 184 or less, little glasses that are stacked up and all shrink-wrapped together. Well, it's for individual glasses of wine. It's nice to, take them in different situations, maybe picnics or stuff like that. The stacked wine is just offering a new one, the Cabernet Sauvignon. Is being added to their list of wines that are available. Previously, they've had the Merlot, Chardonnay, and Pinot Grigio. Now the Cabernet Sauvignon is being added as a four-pack. There's little four-pack stemless glasses, vertically stacked, and then they have a shrink wrap around them telling what it is and all that. Pretty cool idea. We've talked about this in the past and past the shows, and it really is a great idea. They don't sell them here in Florida yet. I've checked around and I haven't seen any, and Mike and I were checking it.
I remember that was from February 21st show. It was supposed to be at Total Wines and More.
Yeah.
And could not find them here. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we haven't been able to see them down. I'm looking forward to getting those, seeing what it's like, and it's sort of cool to see what the glasses are going to be like and all that. We use stemless glasses at the winery. We decided to go stemless a couple of years ago. And actually, we love the stemless glasses. They are fantastic. But here you can get them white with your wine. The California Cabernet Sauvignon, this stage balances flavors of dark fruits like cassis, blackberries, blueberry jam, with their earthy, woody tones of cocoa, pine, and cedar. So with also says with a bit of mint and black licorice and black pepper, the company says. So, you know, it's I don't know who makes the wine. I don't recall that we actually found who is producing these wines for them. But it says here in this little article, available at Total Wines and More, which, again, we didn't find them here. Bristol Farms, as well as other retailers, suggest a retail price for these stacked wines is $14.99, which is an equivalent to a glass or to a bottle of wine. It equals a 750 milliliter bottle of wine. So $14.99 for a decent wine that is broken down into four glasses you can use, it's a good price. So stacked wines out there. Cigar Zen. Cigar Zen has been around for a while. Sonoma was doing Cigar Zen, and they're relaunching the Cigar Zen. Dutch Family Wine and Spirits are joining with Sonoma's Vintage Wine Estates, and they're relaunching the Cigar Zen. New packaging, new everything basically on it, with a riper style bold marketing campaign coming out, so you're going to be seeing this pop up. Cigar Zen was first launched back in 1997 by Cusantina Winery, and it for 15 years they said it was had a big cult following in a lot of select markets around the country. But now it's looking to regain that following. They stopped producing it a few years ago. A rich, spicy Zen with good black and red fruit in it. And just the headline is going to be advertised as you're going to need a bigger steak for the wine. It's going to be hitting the shelves probably within the next couple months, and they're going to be bringing it out in events in New York City and in Las Vegas, and the Cigar Fandiando, Big Smoke in those two places. They're going to be introducing the Cigar Zen with that. Suggested retail price is going to look at around $17.99. So something to look forward to if you like Zins. I love Zins. I will be looking forward to that. Something else here I want to pass on to. Gula, G-U-A-L-A, Gula Closures Group, Chief Operating Officer, has announced that the launch of Turn 360, a promotional campaign developed by leading manufacturer of aluminum closures to enhance the public awareness of the aluminum closures, state-of-the-art closures, for wine. This is a campaign organized through the European Aluminum Foil Association, kicked off with the rollout of the multilingual website, aluminumclosures.org. And if you want to look that up, A-L-U-M-I-N-I-U-M, aluminum-closures, C-L-O-S-U-R-E-S.org, aluminum-closures.org, which provides you user-friendly information about aluminum wine closures in areas such as your taste, your quality, your sustainability, recycling, convenience, technology, efficiency, cost efficiency, and design. So it's coming. Is called 360, turn 360, or actually turn 360 degrees. There's a little degree sign after it. I don't know if it's Celsius or Fahrenheit, but turn 360 degrees. So that's coming out. That's something to be looking forward to. They're going to probably try to, you know, get a lot more of these aluminum closures. European Aluminum Foil Association is organized this campaign. And that's Grape News is what this little article says. I'll just read you the article. It says, according to a study published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, grapes may help protect skin cells against harmful ultraviolet rays. UVA and UVB rays trigger the creation of cell-killing reactions in skin, but special flavonoid compounds found in grapes were shown to reduce those reactions. This also carries over to any form of grapes in wines, juice, or other uses. So, it helps protect your skin against UVA and UVB rays. So, drinking wine also will help you prevent skin cancer. That might be a stretch, but it sounds good and a great way to justify drinking wine also. And so, now, a few announcements I want to make tonight. Got those out of the way.
Yeah.
And I don't know who our guest is going to be next week.
Okay. I was going to ask. I was like, what do we have planned for? Okay.
We don't have. I was telling Mike, I get a lot. I'm on different sites and different things like that. And I get a lot of blogs and all sorts of stuff that I check out all the time. One of them is a communication blog, and they ask the question, who are you and what do you do? And fill it in 100 words or less. And there was a lot of comments over the last week or so on that, with phone numbers and with contact and all that. And a lot of neat people in the wine business that aren't growers, aren't wineries, but they are involved in the wine business, and people are authors that have written books about wine and on wine. And I'm going to try to get a hold of them. I'm going to be sending out emails over the next couple of 3 days and seeing if I can't get a response from somebody and see if we can't, you know, get some of these people on the program and let them talk about wine, since we are all about wine, which is, you know, really quite encompassing. And so I'm going to see if I can't get a hold of some of those people and see if we can't get somebody on. Also, I have a friend in Australia that she has agreed to be on the program sometime. I just need to email her back and forth and find a good time that would be convenient for her. And she is a winery. She's a grower, and she does wine down there. And so that would be an interesting thing, since she's going into her harvest season right now. And in fact, harvest probably should be pretty close to over for her, but that would be interesting to find out some stuff about her. So we've got all sorts of possibilities. Plus, I've got one information I want to pass on to you right now too. Again, Joy's Joy of Wine. This is the blog that I've quoted from quite often. I enjoy this site. I probably should get a hold of Joy and tell her how much I enjoy the site and talk to her and maybe get her on the program. But she wrote this here, and I want to read you a little bit about this. I'm not going into a lot of detail. But it says, tomorrow, for the first time, the United Kingdom will allow the public auction of some very sought-after wines from the government's hospitality wine cellar. So what was originally began as a hospitality fund was established in 1908 in order to offer visiting dignitaries a hospitable welcome. This quickly led to the creation of a government wine cellar. You know, government, I wonder if the United States has a government wine cellar. The Government Hospitality Wine Committee decides what wines will be placed in the cellar to be served at dinners to entertain visiting dignitaries and heads of state. The committee is made up of 5 members, a chairman, and 4 masters of wine. These volunteers are government officials and wine consultants. The wine committee selects the wines to be purchased based on blind tastings. Once acquired, this committee writes tasting descriptions about each wine to aid in selecting what is appropriate for an event or a dignitary. The government purchases the wines young and then holds them in the cellar until they have reached full maturity. The cellar contains wines that are more traditional, include French wines from Bordeaux and Burgundy. The wine committee then reviews the cellared wines periodically to determine several factors, including how they are aging, the quality, estimated time for opening, and what is ready to serve now. Some of the wines are over 70 years old and still in fine shape. The UK government cellar is UK government cellar is a bastion of professional wine cellar management. It is located in the basement of Lancaster House near Buckingham Palace in London. The government cellar holds almost 40,000, that's 40,000 bottles of wine, currently worth an estimated £2.95 million, or $4.47 million. Originally, over $1.2 million was spent to purchase them. The wine committee also recommends which wines should be sold and when. Tomorrow, Christie's will auction several of the wines from the UK government cellar. These wines are said to be in peak condition and ready to be consumed. On the list to be auctioned are six wines of Chateau Latour, vintage 1961. Tasting notes indicate that the wine has been fully mature for 15 years, but it seems to get richer, developing more aromatic nuances without losing any sweetness or concentration. It is estimated to be worth $30,200 to $45,300. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Other government lots include six bottles of 1970 Petrus. Notes indicate it is a profound Petrus and certainly one of the great Petruses of the last half century. It has an estimated value of $750,000. Also, $7,500. Also, six bottles of Petrus vintage 1978 will be on auction with a value around $6,000. A case of 1986 Menthon Rothschild, last tasted in November 2005, has notes which say, quote, nowhere near ready, hopefully 2010, with a question mark. Estimated value, $7,500 to $9,000. And a case of 1986 Le Pin. Tasting notes say the finish is long and almost Medoc-like. The case is expected to bring in around $15,100. That amount expected to be raised for the total amount expected to be raised for the 54 bottles sold in six lots should be around $75,500. But this is auction, so don't be afraid of it. The UK government wine cellar provides wine for over 200 events each year, and the wine to be auctioned tomorrow has been served to kings, queens, presidents, and prime ministers throughout the decades. That's in quotes. The auction for the UK government's wines will begin at 2:30 p.m. London time Thursday, March 21st. That's today. That actually probably yesterday for them by now.
Yep.
Lots 207 to 12 come directly from government hospitality wine cellars where they have been stored since their original purpose. The auction will be held at Lancaster House on King Street, London. To watch the auction in real time or to register to bid online, visit, and I will give this to you, https://www.christies.com/mycristies/login.aspx?action=, or the equal sign, cell restoration and cell ID, all week one long word, cellregistration, and that's the ampersand for the and, not the word, cell, CELLEID, equals 24147. So I don't know if they've all sold out, but if you're listening to this live, you can jump over and log in right now and see what's going on. I think I might log into it when we get off here and see what's happening. So, let you know about that. If you need to do it, you need to do it now, because those lots may be going fast. If you have an extra, you know, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 sitting around burning a hole in your pocket.
Yeah. And there are probably quite a few of those.
Yep.
Not me. But...
Not me.
Good. Good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. So next Thursday is kind of a question mark. We'll have a show, but we're not sure if there's going to be a guest or, you know, a definite one yet.
Not sure, but, you know,
yeah.
Whatever it is, it's always exciting on All About Wine.
Absolutely. Informative, entertaining, and all about wine. But stay tuned to the Facebook page, or the website actually has the Facebook stuff on there. So, you know, if you don't want to get on Facebook and you still want to see the Facebook feed, just go to our website. It's allaboutwinebtr.com, and right there on the main page, you'll see the Facebook feed. So you can do that. And if you want to be a guest, or you want to just, you know, and you don't have to necessarily be a winery owner or a vineyard, you know, owner or anything like that, but you do have a topic you want to talk about relating to wine, get in touch with Ron. You can go to the website, and there's a contact page there, and send him a message, and that's the best way to get it started, and we'll have you on the air as a guest. So that'd be cool. Yeah. So for all the information, just get on our website, and you'll keep up that way. And as soon as, you know, anything is announced as far as, you know, guests or upcoming shows, that usually goes to Facebook first, and that's your best way. So, and I just misspelled planning. So, I was tweeting as he was talking, and I put, our guest tonight is currently a grape grower planning to open winery in the fall. You know, Twitter, you're limited to 140 characters, so...
Right, so you can read me.
The extra N was, take it off, I don't know. That's what it was. And planning is a word, so it's not like I made up a word. It just doesn't, it's not the right, what I was looking for. But anyway... but I spelled Pennsylvania right, which was a shock. So I can't spell planning, but I can spell Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
What in the world is this one doing here?
PA. That's all. PA.
Yeah, I should have gone that route. But in any case, hold on a second. I don't want to mute the microphone when I'm coughing. That wouldn't sound good. I'd probably get more listeners with the audio issues.
Yeah,
join us on that would be March 28th, and you know, great time of year for us. Definitely up here in Florida, because it's already almost summertime. But you can join us, and we'll talk about wine at some capacity next Thursday at 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. And unless you have anything else to add, I guess we can go ahead and close it down. And
happy first day of spring, everyone out there.
Oh yeah, and wow. I missed that part. I'm going to have a celebration and everything. I missed it. The spring party.
Put away all the winter clothes now. It's spring.
Mm, yep. Although it was, 40-something this morning? 50-something this morning?
Yeah.
It was cold.
take all
the
snow tires, put on the summer tires.
That's right. That's right. Really cool. So we'll thank everybody out there for listening to us.
Thank you all for listening.
Wherever you may be. And thank you to our live listeners. And if you ever want to join us on the program and you're listening live, you can call our guest call-in number, which is 646-727-3235. That number is also on the website and on the Blog Talk Radio show page. And it's there. So, you know, you can always join us and we'll talk about wine. So do that anytime during the program. But unfortunately, this show is going to close right now, and we will see you all next Thursday, the 28th of March, at 7 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S. And thanks again for tuning in. Y'all have a great week, and we'll just raise a glass and say we'll see you all next time.
See you next week. Thank y'all for joining us.
And you know what's coming up next.
Everybody dance.
That's right.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page.
go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.